Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mahavishnu Buddhaya Krishna Prasaya Buddhale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Saraswata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nityashesha Shunyavadi Paschatradesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasri Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10 Chapter 69 Verse 9. Vishtabdam Vidruma Stambai Vaidurya Fala Kottamai Indranila Mayai Udyair Jagatya Chahata Trisha Vishtabdam vidrumastambhaya
Vishtabdam vidrumastambhaya
Vaidurya falakottamai
Vaidurya falakottamai
Indranilamaya kujaya
Indranilamaya kujaya
Jagatya chahata tvisha Vishtabdam vidrumastambhaya
Vishtabdam vidrumastambhaya
Vaidurya falakottamai Indra nila mayai kudai
Indra nila mayai kudai
Jagatya chahata tvisha Coral Stambai By pillars Vaidurya Of Vaidurya gems Falaka With decorative coverings. Uttamai. Excellent. Indranila Mayai. Bedecked with sapphires. Kudyai. With walls. Jagatya. With a floor. Cha. And. Ahata. Constant. Twisha. Whose effulgence. Translation, supporting the palace were coral pillars decoratively inlaid with Vaidurya gems. Sapphires bedecked the walls and the floors glowed with perpetual brilliance. In that palace, Tvashta had arranged canopies with hanging strands of pearls. There were also seats and beds fashioned of ivory and precious jewels. In attendance were many well-dressed maidservants bearing the lockets on their necks and also armor-clad guards with turbans, fine uniforms, and jeweled earrings. The glow of numerous jewel-studded lamps dispelled all darkness in the palace. My dear king, on the ornate ridges of the roof danced loudly crying peacocks who saw the fragrant aguru incense escaping through the holes of the lattice windows and mistook it for a cloud. Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada writes, there was so much incense and fragrant gum burning that the scented fumes were coming out the windows. The peacocks became illusioned by the fumes, mistaking them for clouds and began dancing jubilantly. There were many maidservants, all of whom were decorated with gold necklaces, bangles, and beautiful saris. There were also many male servants who were nicely decorated in cloaks and turbans and jeweled earrings. Beautiful as they were, the servants were all engaged in different household duties. Text 13, in that palace, the learned Brahmana, that is Narada Muni, saw the Lord of the Sattva, Sri Krishna, together with his wife, who fanned him with a gold-handled yak-tail fan. She personally served him in this way, even though she was constantly attended by 1,000 maidservants equal to her in personal character, beauty, youth, and fine dress. The Supreme Lord is the greatest upholder of religious principles. Thus, when he noticed Narada, he rose at once from Goddess Sri's bed, bowed his crowned head at Narada's feet, and joining his palms, had the sage sit in his own seat. The Lord bathed Narada's feet and then put the water on his own head. Although Lord Krishna is the supreme spiritual authority of the universe and master of his devotees, it was proper for him to behave in this way. For his name is Brahmanya Deva, the Lord who favors the Brahmanas. Thus, Sri Krishna honored the sage Narada by bathing his feet, even though the water that bathes the Lord's own feet becomes the Ganges, the ultimate holy shrine. Wherefore, since Lord Krishna's own lotus feet are the source of the most holy Ganges, the Lord did not have to purify himself by bathing Narada Muni's feet. Rather, Srila Prabhupada explains, the Lord Krishna and Dwarka enjoyed the pastimes of a perfect human being. When, therefore, he washed the feet of the sage Narada and took the water on his head, Narada did not object, knowing well that the Lord did so to teach everyone how to respect saintly persons. So we have two things here. One is the description of the palace of Lord Krishna in Dwarka, and the other is the reception of Narada Muni by Krishna. So one of these things is very spectacular, that is the palace. So we see here a description of all the jewels of which the palace was made. In one sense we can say, well, that's material. We have, you know, sapphires and cat's eyes and diamonds and rubies and whatever. These are material things. And sometimes we will find palaces in the material world like that. We can read descriptions and even see palaces with jewels, like, what is it, the Winter Palace in St. Petersburg has got, aventurine columns or lapis lazuli columns, etc. inlaid at least, or covered with it. So we get some idea of the splendor of Dwarka. But we should not think that this is material. It's not even material sapphires, and it's not material gold, or not material whatever. Because everything in Dwarka is spiritual. It's a spiritual world. So when we talk about sapphires and whatnot, it's not material sapphires. However, the description does give us some idea of the color and the splendor of that palace of Krishna. So that is one aspect of Dwarka, the splendor. It is like we see descriptions of Vaikuntha, very, very similar to this. It is full of wonderful things, like as mentioned here, all the jeweled aspects of the palace, and then the peacocks and the birds and the lattices of the windows, etc. Which is impressive. But as I said, it's all spiritual. So this is suitable to Dwarka, because Dwarka is the majestic aspect of Krishna. He displays more Aishvarya or more opulence and grandeur there than he does in Mathura or Dwarka. In Vrindavan. So this is very suitable. Yet as I mentioned the other day also, wherever he is, Krishna is unique, because even though he displays such great splendor here in Dwarka, still he is distinguished from the Narayan forms and other forms of God by his human nature. He is humanly, acts as a human being. So in spite of the fact that he is in Dwarka, and this is a very splendid place, and he shows his power as Supreme Lord, still he acts in many ways as an ordinary human being, and people cannot really detect is this God or is this just a great king? So if one is a devotee, of course, and we see the wonders of this palace, then we will say, well, yes, this belongs to the Supreme Lord. This, no material palace can equal this. So a devotee like Sudama, when he comes to the palace and he sees it, he's, oh, yes, this is what Krishna deserves, because he's Supreme Lord. A materialist will say, well, that's not so spectacular after all, because we have palaces like that in the material world also. So maybe he's a normal human being. And then when they see how Krishna acts, then they may think, oh yes, he's acting just like everybody else. And later on we'll see when Narada Muni describes the activities of Krishna, it looks as if he's almost a normal person. If we look like an ordinary person, not like Narada Muni can see. If we see like an ordinary person, then when we think, oh, Krishna is just some person who has 16,000 wives, and sometimes he visits one or the other, and then he has children and everything, but he acts like a normal person, because he would see him go into the palace and associate with his queen, and he acted like a husband to the queen. And he acted like a normal husband would act. And he would joke with the queen and whatever. And the queen would serve him, like a wife should serve the husband, like that. And then he would go about his daily duties in the same way. He would get up in the morning dutifully before the sun rose, and he would take his bath and everything. Then he would sit down and he would do sandhya, that is perform Gayatri Mantra, do that like a normal person. And he would perform homa, he would do sacrifices. And then he would go to the assembly hall. As a king, he would go to the assembly hall, and then he would hear complaints or comments or whatever from people, advice, get advice like this, and he'd talk to everybody. And then he would go back to his palace again, or he would go out hunting or go out on get his horses and go out for a while and come back again. Like this. So it looked like a normal person. Daily activities like a normal person. So this is what Narada Muni saw also, and everyone else would see this also. But Narada Muni also saw something different, because he's a little empowered, he's a Shaktivesh avatar. So what he did, he instantaneously went from one palace to the other at the speed of the mind. Then he observed one palace, next palace, next palace, next palace, like this. And then he saw that Krishna was in all the palaces simultaneously. But actually nobody else knew that. And each queen thought, Krishna is in my palace. And when Krishna came to the assembly, there was only one Krishna. But when he went into the chambers, then suddenly he was 16,108 Krishnas. But nobody knew that. Because they all joined together when he came out of the palaces. And there was one Krishna going to the assembly, one Krishna came out of the assembly, and then suddenly he went into the palaces, and zoop, he turned into 16,000 forms, 16,108 forms. And then he was doing different activities in different palaces even. And by Krishna's power, Achintya Shakti, his inconceivable power, actually he showed that different activities at different times of the day were going on simultaneously, as if he could alter the time. So, and the seasons even were different in different palaces. So one, they were celebrating a spring festival, another palace they were having a winter festival, like this, in different parts of the day, whatever. And it was one Krishna, because it was the same Krishna, but actually it was 16,108 Krishnas. So then he saw, this is remarkable. I've never seen this before, how Krishna can, anyone can do this, divide himself up like this. Of course, we see something similar to that in Vrindavan Lila, in the Brahma Mohana Lila, where Krishna divided himself up into all the calves and all the cowherd boys. And that's also a very huge number. I think the number of calves that they herded and the number of cowherd boys is mentioned somewhere by Vishnu Chakravarti, and it's a few million also. So he divided himself up into all the calves, and he was each calf, and the mother calves couldn't recognize that this was not their calf, because each calf is individual, and the mother would reject all the other calves and dispute her own calf. So he saw Krishna's my calf. So they couldn't see. And all the mothers thought that this is my child. So Krishna acted exactly like each child, and mothers and fathers could not see that it was not their child. So Krishna put on different forms in that case, but it was all Krishna. But then another case, there's a special expansion of Krishna in which all the forms are exactly the same. So that was also manifested in Vrindavan and the Rasa-lila, because Krishna divided himself into 3 billion forms. Because he was with each gopi, and each gopi thought, Krishna is with me. So he had 3 billion forms there, not just 16,108. So as I mentioned before, whatever Krishna manifests in Dwarka, actually Krishna manifests much more in Vrindavan. So not only the sweetness, but even the powers are manifested to a higher degree in Vrindavan. So this is an example. There's a Dwarka manifestation where Krishna manifests 16,108 forms. But in Vrindavan, Krishna manifested 3 billion forms of Krishna. So each of the gopis thought, Krishna is with me. And there weren't separate palaces either. The gopis were all in a circle, and there was a Krishna and a gopi and a Krishna and a gopi and a Krishna and a gopi. But still, they could not see that there's a Krishna here and there's a Krishna here. Each gopi thought, Krishna is on my shoulder here. And they didn't look over there to see if Krishna is on the other shoulder of the other gopi. So they're right next to each other, and still they could only see one Krishna with me. So this is the power of Krishna. He manifests so many forms instantaneously and without effort. And if he wants, he can hide it from everybody else simultaneously. So that in that way we see that Krishna's power was even more in Vrindavan than it was in Dwarka. Nevertheless, Narada Muni was astonished when he saw this aspect of the Supreme Lord, how much power he had. Because Narada Muni sees everything in the universe and outside the universe because he can go anywhere. But when he saw this, he was also very, very amazed at the ingenious nature of Krishna. But this is not simply for showing power that Krishna does this. Of course, he wanted to astonish Narada Muni, so he revealed all this to him. But why does Krishna do this? It's because he likes to satisfy his devotees. And each devotee has a particular way in which he is satisfied in his service to the Supreme Lord. So some are satisfied when they see Krishna in this very regal position with all the palaces and the jewels and everything, how he's worshipped by the Yadus and others. So some people like that. But even within that, then everyone has a particular relationship with Krishna. So some are servants, some are relatives, and some are friends, and some are parents or elders like Vasudeva and Devaki or Ugrasena. And they have parental relationship with Krishna. And then we have the Madhurya Rasa with the wives. So he had 16,108 wives. And with each of them, he has to act as husband. Why? Because that's what they expect. That's their relationship with Krishna. And so therefore he manifests for each one of them. It was described when he rescued all these women, the 16,000 women. They were all praying, "Let Krishna be our husband." And of course, Krishna was very merciful because no one would touch those women because actually Narakasura had kidnapped them, so nobody wants a kidnapped wife, kidnapped woman for a wife. But then Krishna thought, "Oh, the devotees," so he took them all, and no one could criticize. But he satisfied their desire, because they wanted that relationship. And so therefore he manifested it. He married each one in a separate palace. So then each one would think, yeah, Krishna's married to me, and wouldn't think of the other wives. He had to satisfy everybody. So therefore he was with every one of them, and he expanded his form for that purpose, to satisfy each one. So that is simply to respect his devotees ultimately. So that is where the sweetness aspect of Krishna comes, and he satisfies everybody according to their desire. We see with the other forms of God, the Lord does not expand himself, and he doesn't even have other wives. So Narayan has one wife, and Rama has one wife, but there we see. Narada Muni has. Krishna has so many wives, and so many gopis in Vrindavan. This is the nature of Krishna. He likes to satisfy his devotees. That is not to say that Narayan and Nrsimha and others don't satisfy their devotees. Yes, but they're expecting something different. So therefore, they get those different forms are there, and different relationships are there. But the nature of Krishna is all relationships manifest there in all devotees. So therefore, it's not just one person manifests Madhurya Rasa Lakshmi. Many people manifest, and they're attracted to Krishna in that relationship. That's a special quality. Whereas if one sees Narayan, nobody's going to develop Madhurya Rasa for Narayan. It's not possible. But with Krishna, then that form evokes Madhurya Rasa. That's why it is Madhurya Rupa. It manifests particular attraction. But not only that, it manifests Sakya Rasa, the friendship relation, and the Vatsalya Rasa, and the Dasya Rasa, even the Santa Rasa. It manifests all completely. So this is Krishna's particular nature. As I said, Krishna acts, part of the sweetness of Krishna is he acts like a human being. So therefore, he can do this, he can respond in a much more spontaneous way with everyone. Even in Dwarka, he can respond like that. So we see here how Krishna acts in relation to Narada. So we know that Narada is actually in Dasya Rasa. And he has reverence for the Supreme Lord. Of course, he's also Shaktivesh Avatar, so he's in a special position. But he's also a sage and a brahmana. So Krishna is Supreme Lord. So in one sense, Narada Muni is Dasya, he's servant of the Lord. But on the other hand, Krishna is playing the part of a king. And a king worships the brahmanas and the sages. and of course the Vaishnavas. And so here we see how Lord Krishna is very respectful to Narada Muni. So immediately when Narada Muni comes, then he washes his feet. And this is the reception. He seats him, washes his feet, and offers some things like this, or has Lakshmi, or his wife, Queen, serve him. And then he takes the water and puts it on his head. Tradition, Brahminical. When a Brahmin comes, you take the water and put it on your head. So Krishna's acting like a normal king would do. Or a normal kshatriya, any kshatriya would do this. So this is what Krishna is doing. Of course, he's following Dharma and acting like a normal person. Krishna is called Brahmanyadeva, or very affectionate towards the Brahminical community. So therefore, it is expected that he would do this. Of course, Vishnu also does this. And therefore, the story of Vishnu and how he got kicked on the chest. But, I respect the Brahmana. So he thought, this is very, very nice. So Vishnu also does this. But Krishna is even more spectacular in what he will do for his devotees. He worships his devotee here. He actually worships him. And puts the water on his head. So, as I said, one aspect is he's showing the nature of what a king should do in the Varnashram society. He should respect the Brahmana, so that's normal. But the other thing, of course, is that Krishna also respects his devotees. And he's very, very attached to his devotees. That is also seen with Vishnu, because in the story of Ambarish, you see there that Vishnu says, I am in my devotee's heart, my devotee's heart is in me. We are non-different, so therefore I surrender and I'm very attracted to my devotee, and no one can offend my devotee. I get very upset by that. And if you want forgiveness, better go to my devotee, don't come to me. Even Vishnu is very attracted to his devotee. But, as I said, Krishna shows even more extreme behavior. Whatever Vishnu shows, Krishna shows more. So then, if Vishnu also is attracted to his devotee, Krishna is even more attracted to his devotees and will surrender more and do more for his devotees. And we'll see this in many cases. Here is this one case where he's bathing Narada Muni's feet, and then he sits him down and he has him fanned, etc. And in the case of Sudama, we see also he worships him, in spite of the fact that Sudama has got rags on his body and he's not very clean and he's poor and skinny and whatever. He's worshiping him, and he has his queen worship him also. That's one case, but Krishna will even show more extreme forms of this. So we have it in Dwarka and other places. For instance, Krishna becomes a charioteer for Arjuna, and the charioteer is like a sudra almost. You're not in a very respectable position to be a charioteer. A kshatriya says, ride the chariot and fight. And if you're driving the chariot, that's considered low caste, very bad. But Krishna takes that position. Why? Because it's a friend. He'll do it for a friend. So that we will not see with Narayan and others. They won't do that. But Krishna will do that. But more than Dwarka, we'll see in Vrindavan that Krishna does even more. He will take even a lower position than that. So of course we see the examples, Krishna and Vrindavan. Of course he is younger, in fact he's a little baby, so he takes the completely subservient position. He's completely dependent upon Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj when he's a baby. And he cries like a baby, and cries for milk. God should not be hungry. God should not be thirsty. God is the protector of everybody. There's no hunger and thirst in the spiritual world. God has no hunger and thirst. And God shouldn't cry, because God is beyond the three modes of material nature and the dualities of happiness and distress. You have Krishna crying, and he's hungry, and he's thirsty, and he wants Mother Yasoda to hold him. So this is, it's not, and also it's not just Krishna's pretending to do this to satisfy Mother Yasoda. If he was just pretending to do this to satisfy her, then it would be actually artificial. Krishna is dependent upon her. But of course, it's not real hunger and thirst in the normal sense, because that's material. But Krishna is thirsty and is hungry and is dependent. And what is he dependent on? He's dependent on prema. Mother Yasoda's prema. That is what he relishes. So instead of drinking milk, it is that he drinks the prema. When he's eager for Mother Yasoda's milk, he's actually eager for her prema. And he experiences great prema when she shows her affection for him and serves him in this way. So in other words, Krishna's eager for the service of the devotee, and when he gets that, then he feels very, very satisfied. And to do that, he will put himself in a very different position from the normal position of God. So he puts himself in the position of a baby. And Mother Yasoda hugs him and cuddles him and nurses him and bathes him and whatever. So this we don't see in other forms of God. But Krishna does this, and he's blissful, very, very blissful with this. And of course, as I mentioned the other day, who can bind up Krishna? Because Krishna is the Lord of all forms of avatars, etc., and Lord of the material world and the spiritual world. And karma and everything else is under Krishna. But yet, Krishna gets tied up by Mother Yasoda. And in other forms, he ties everybody up. He ties up Bali Maharaj. He kills the demons. He uses karma to tie up all the jivas and make them nitya buddhas, and eternally bound in the material world. And yet Krishna becomes bound up. Well, bound up by what? The ropes of prema, of Mother Yasoda. The ropes are not real ropes, because they're not material. So what can bind Krishna? Prema. So it's ropes of prema that bind up Krishna. He's bound up by Mother Yasoda. He can't move. So he agrees to stop his playing, refrain himself from doing mischief, because Mother Yasoda is so insistent, and we have to teach Krishna something. And so Krishna agrees, okay. Mother Yasoda's will is stronger than mine. It is her will to show her affection for Krishna which is stronger. Not that she's more powerful. But her prema is so strong that Krishna agrees, yes, I will have to agree. So that is actually represented by the... it is said that when Mother Yasoda got all the rope and she tied it up, you know, and tried to tie it up around Krishna, and it was two fingers too short, a little bit like that. Then she got some more rope. She tied it together, made a longer rope, and she tried to tie Krishna. It was the same, two fingers too short. And she got some more rope, tied it on. Tried to tie it. Same, the same length. Too short by two fingers. So obviously, there's something wrong, because Krishna was the same size, and the rope was longer, but it wouldn't fit. But it was always the same amount. That same amount, too short. So then I said, what is the significance of that? Why was two fingers too short? So the answer is that this two fingers too short, that represents the two aspects which are necessary in bhakti. So one aspect is the endeavor of the devotee. So what was the endeavor of Mother Yasoda? She was trying to tie up Krishna. And she kept trying and trying and trying and trying and trying. And all afternoon she was grabbing ropes from the neighbors and tying it together and trying to tie up Krishna. And after a while she became very tired. And she said, I will not give up. And Krishna said, I will not give up either, because I'm not going to get tied up. I want to play. I'm not going to get tied up. And so they were going, this competition was going on all afternoon. But Mother Yasoda said, no, I'm not going to give up. And she got more rope and more rope and more rope. But then Krishna saw that Mother Yasoda was actually getting tired, and she was perspiring. And still she wouldn't give up. Then he said, okay, I'm defeated. So one is the endeavor of the devotee. They're very determined in their service. And what is the other aspect? The mercy of Krishna. So Krishna doesn't say, okay, I will agree to be tied up. Then, of course, no one can tie him up. So, yes, the endeavor of the devotee is there. The other is the mercy of Krishna. And by those two things, then Krishna is tied up. Krishna is subservient. His choice, of course. But he will do that. He will give his mercy if the devotee puts forth the proper endeavor very, very sincerely. So endeavor and mercy are the two means of advancement by which Krishna reveals himself and gives prema. So this form of Krishna is very special, because he does this. He puts himself in unexpected positions
which we don't expect God to do. But he does this because of his love for his devotee and the devotee's expectation of Krishna. And so he responds in the proper way. So this is all because of that very intense love that they show. And that is shown in the Krishna form, and it is shown most intensely in the Vrindavan form. And of course, in Vrindavan, the ultimate, Mother Yasoda, of course, is glorified in the first 15 chapters of the 10th canto. And Sukadeva Goswami says, actually, Mother Yasoda is the highest devotee because her love is so intense. And Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion, in I think the third, is it? Third or second part. Anyway, he also explains that different rasas go up to different intensities. And so Shanta rasa is basically very low, and then Dasya rasa goes up a little higher, and the prema is this one stage, and above we get bhava, we get prema, and then that we get sneha, and above that we get raga. And then above raga we get mana and anuraga, and then we get mahabhava. So there's different stages of intensity, which means the attraction for Krishna becomes more and more intense. Well, due to that attraction, one cannot bear separation from Krishna. And if it happens, then one really becomes upset. So we'll see when the separation from Krishna becomes most intense in the gopis. And then next is Mother Yasoda. Nanda Maharaj, when they're separated from Krishna, then they show remarkable symptoms also. The different rasas actually become more and more intense also. So the Dasya rasa will show, basically it'll be prema, maybe a little sneha, something like that. And then when they get to sakya, then there is more sneha, more intensity in it, and less able to bear separation from Krishna. Then we get the vatsalya rasa, and there it goes up to raga all the time. Intense craving for Krishna. And separation makes complete disturbance. So it is very, very high. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami praises Mother Yasoda. Very, very intense devotee, very high devotee in the first 15 chapters. But of course, then ultimately, the gopis are the highest example. They go up to Mahabhava, and then their attachment to Krishna is the most intense. Therefore, even in Vrindavan, we get degrees of intensity of the love of Krishna, and it goes up to Mahabhava finally, and that's manifest in the gopis. So in this way, this is only manifested in Krishna, and we won't find this in any other form. So therefore, Krishna is identified as Swayam Bhagavan because of this uniqueness. And part of that uniqueness is shown in this chapter where we see how Narada Muni observes Krishna in the different palaces and shows his powers and his affection and everything. Okay. Any
question? I don't mean to sound pedantic, but you know the two finger lengths.
Yes.
Two finger lengths or two finger widths?
Just as two fingers, but if it's two fingers the other way, it's a finger, how long is that?
So, like two fingers length end to end?
I don't know, it doesn't say. Usually I think of it this way because it's shorter, but actually two fingers is a length this way, actually, isn't it? I think it's two fingers is... It's a particular length. I have a hasta, and I think we have a finger also. I wouldn't know the angulis. Oh, the flute is defined in terms of fingers also, I think. Krishna's flute is so many fingers, angulis. So it's a particular size, and maybe it's about 2 centimeters or something. I'm not sure.
So it is the width of the finger.
It's probably a fat finger. Yeah, because I think the flute is measured in angulis or something like that. Yeah. So it couldn't be this way because that makes the flute immensely long.
I have another question.
Yeah.
The devotees of Lord Nrisingadev, are they able to go to a place like a planet where Lord Nrisingadev lives and serve him?
Oh, yeah. In Lago Bhagavatamrita, the Rupa Goswami explains that each of the avatar forms has their eternal forms because they can't be temporary, obviously. So they have planets in the material world someplace, and somewhere up, and some have Patalaloka, some have the lower planet, some have an upper planet like Maharloka or Brahmaloka. They have their separate abodes up there. And then they also have places in the spiritual world. So he says all the avatar forms, even the Shaktivesh avatar forms, also have places in the spiritual world.
Because on the original cover of the Bhagavad Gita, you have all the different Vishnu forms.
Yeah.
And they're all Vishnu forms beforehand.
Yeah.
So the Srinaloka, mm-hmm. is he a Vishnu form beforehand, or does he look like a lion?
Well, that's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita there, it describes all those forms, and that just gives like Vishnu forms with the Shankar Chakra.
Yes.
And different. So those are actually Vishnu forms with those particular names, like Keshava and whatever. Huh? But the avatar forms are separate from that, as far as that goes.
So if you push it on the Sugadai, then you'll be in his line form.
Yeah, and you'll go to that planet and worship him there. Yeah.
So same, you can then be a Koma Loka and a Varada Loka.
Yeah. And Parshuram Loka, if I'm guessing.
I was wondering if the devotees who are in particular Bhava Krishna is Sakyaras or Asalaks, can they experience other Bhavas as well?
Well, there's some devotees that have mixes. So they have, but one is usually predominant. But like in the Pandavas, generally they have Dasya and it's mixed with Sakya, in the case of Arjuna it's mixed with Vatsalya, in the case of Yudhisthira because he's elder, or even with Balaram is Sakya, but he's elder, so there's a little Vatsalya mixed in there. So there's a particular combinations which fit together. Sometimes they're called harmonious, and others are contradictory, so they can't exist together. So Vatsalya and Madhurya can't exist together in the same person because it's contradictory. So some things won't exist together, others are mixtures in it. Huh? So Dasya can mix with certain things, but and you know, each rasa can mix with others.
So when we're practicing sadhana, and developing a particular rasa with Krishna,
yeah.
Does that mean that rasa is already established within us? It's innate within us, and it's a matter of bringing that out again.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to say, because as far as the acharyas like Vishwanath explain it, he just says it manifests in the heart and it's eternal because it's in the spiritual world. Yeah, it manifests in the associates, nitya citizen spiritual world, and then it enters into you, that bhava, at that particular point. But that doesn't mean that you're a nothing or anything like that, because obviously a wise enter into you, that particular one, at that particular point. And then of course the answer to that is because your sadhana was in a particular direction. But then why did your sadhana go in that particular direction? Obviously you had some choice in the matter. Of course mercy is also there from the devotee, so association produces with your bhava in one sense also. But then why did you actually choose that particular association? So it looks like there's a little, you know, individuality involved also there, so it's hard to say, but we can say at least the inclinations are there. And the free will of the jiva is there, so he chooses. But then, of course, the mercy and the sadhana and everything is also there. Nitya siddha's influence is also there.
Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, various expansions of the Lord which are mentioned, can tell us that more, like Keshava, Narayana,
Madhava. Yeah, well, those are the 24 Vishnu forms in Vaikuntha, you mean. Oh, yeah, there's the technical things like the Prakash forms and the Vaibhava forms, and Vaibhava Prakash and whatever, Vaibhava Vilas forms. Yeah. Those are somewhat explained in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita also. Basically, it has to do with, and then this form also is described where Krishna himself expands exactly the same, with the same potencies. That's one form, that's maybe the most powerful form, Swayamrupa Krishna in these forms. Huh? Then we get the slightly less powerful forms that manifest, swamsa forms. Swamsa means, amsa means a part, and swa means my part. That's not like a take a flower and put a part out of it like that, because God cannot be divided up. So we call them expansions. So the expansions are graded according to the similarity and the powers, amount of powers they show. So that's how they're classified, and they give the different names to them. So that we have the first category, and the first closest one is Balaram. Almost the same, and same form, except the color is different, and almost the same power, a little bit less. But then we get other expansions, like the Narayan forms, so they're also Swamsa forms, but form is slightly different again, because he has four arms, etc. And then powers are less, a little bit less. And of course we'll have lesser forms than that even, because we'll find forms, some of the avatar forms like Mohini and Dhanvantari and Dattatreya, etc., they're considered, and Rishabhadev, they're considered as less powers, even though they're actually Swamsa forms also. So accordingly they're classified like that into these different categories.
Gracias.
What is that? Nardamuni. Oh, well, there, no. Actually, that in the first canto, there's a story of how his mother was died, and he was serving the Vedantas, whatever, the rishis, and then he got bhakti, and he developed, and then he actually saw Krishna once in his life, and then he had to wait for the rest of his life, and then he died, and passed out of his body, and then he attained his spiritual body simultaneously. And that was... he goes, in other words, he's describing different lifetimes. That's one lifetime, then he becomes a sage, etc. And then there's a story of how he's also the Darva, and he got cursed to become the son of the maidservant also. So it goes through several lifetimes like that. But actually, we can say that this is ultimately just Leela, because he also is a Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord, so he's very, very special. And so these are just pastimes and how he... to illustrate the development of bhakti.
I was wondering in terms of the material attachments that we need to give up to actually love God completely. It appears to be that attachment to people is the strongest, because it's easier to give up other things.
Yeah.
So how does one dovetail the attachment to family and people? Because that sort of pulling you back into the material world, but you can't go there.
Yeah.
So how do you do that?
Yeah. Good question. Not only, well, people usually, more than objects, obviously, people have attachment to other people in general, but it may be distorted in some cases due to disturbance or whatever. And then, of course, people become attached to animals and whatever, everything else also. So, in the case of Bart, he became attached to a deer and became a deer in his next lifetime. So, yes, that the bondage of the material world, as everybody calls it, you know, the bondage, and why we're forced into one life after the other, and one bondage is karma. But the bondage is actually the attachment, and the attachment is actually attachment to the relationships. And the reason for the attachment to the relationships is we get some sort of pleasure out of that relationship, which is a material pleasure that we get out of that. And so that's the cause. And ultimately, it's a desire for pleasure. And this is the root of our material existence. And it's very, very difficult to get rid of that. But of course, Krishna also says, if you surrender unto me, you can get rid of it. But other processes are not useful. So bhakti is the process by which you can do that. Even then, for many people, it's going to be difficult. Nevertheless, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it's difficult to control the senses, but still you have to try. So, how do we do it? Bhakti is the easiest process of all the different processes. The other process is to go through karma, and gradually you become a little more detached if you go from the gunas, from the ignorant state to passion, and you get the goodness, say, sattva gun. When you become very brahminical at that stage, then you become a little more detached from material things and from your relationships, and etc. like that. So there's a lot of rules for brahmanas of how they have to act, because they're supposed to be more detached from relationships, etc. Kshatriyas and others, not so restricted. But that takes many, many births to get up to that stage. After that, then it is much easier, of course. So the nature of bhakti is such that even if you don't go through all those stages, it is possible to get that sort of detachment through bhakti itself, without having to go through many, many, many lifetimes to reach up to the stage of being a Brahmana, etc. So that is why Bhagavatam says that if you're not a Brahmana, even if you're an outcast and you're not even the Varnashram system, you can also take to the process of bhakti and be purifying. And in fact, it says that even if you chant once the name of the Lord, or think of the Lord's lotus feet, or do any type of bhakti, even that is enough to destroy all your karmas and attachments, etc. So that also is possible. But again, it requires great sincerity. So if we sincerely surrender to the Lord, then this can take place. Because Krishna is in control of everything. And he will remove the ignorance and the attachments, etc. But it requires that great surrender. that sincerity of the surrender. If that is there, then it can be quite quick. Yeah. Otherwise, it's very difficult. Very, very difficult to give up attachments in the material world. If we give up one, then another attachment takes its place immediately. It's difficult, but then the process of bhakti will do it, and it's the quickest process, and if you do it intensely, then you will get quick results. And if you do it mildly, then you get slower results. And so. Now, just in this case, the case of the devotees illustrated here, like the people in Vrindavan, they have intense attraction to Krishna. No other attraction. In the case of the practicing devotees of the material world, it's divided. We have our attraction for the material thing. We also have attraction for Krishna. So there's a tug of war, more or less, going on, which we're going to choose. Sometimes more of this way, sometimes more of that way. But if one advances to a very high stage, then that attraction to the material things and whatever this becomes less and less, and Krishna dominates more and more, until it's 100% Krishna only. Without that, you cannot go to the spiritual world and come back again.
Is it eternal or not eternal?
It's eternal.
Nrsimhadeva.
Yeah. The Vaikuntha form with a lion head is there. There's a Kurma form there. And there's a Varaha form also. They cannot be temporary. All forms of the Lord are eternal.
You know, having 10 kinds of bhagavatams in the end of the novel, where the queens of Krishna's queens get stolen away from the cowards.
Yeah.
I heard that some of them wanted to become gopis, or they wanted to, they were admiring the gopis.
They were?
They were admiring the gopis.
Who?
And the queens, some of the queens.
Oh.
And it's explained in the 10th canto how they were actually glorifying them to Draupadi. And the purpose is explained that they became the gopis.
By getting kidnapped? Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Well, what I saw, I think Vishnu mentions in the first canto or second canto, he mentions that, how they were captured. And there he explains that actually, you take these dacoits, no one can touch spiritual persons. And Brahma cannot touch the cowherd boys even. So he didn't put to sleep cowherd boys. They were false cowherd boys made by the Supreme Lord's energy, Mahamaya. And those are the ones who went to sleep. So any old normal dacoit cannot touch the associates of the Lord at all. So we shouldn't think that. So he explains it, that who are these dacoits? They were actually Krishna. And Krishna just took them away. They disappeared into Krishna's eternal pastimes that way. That's all.
It
doesn't explain that. If some are in sadhana, yes. If they're in their eternal forms and already associated with Krishna in dwarf, I don't think they would change, as far as I can see.
Aren't you like we see in the world that there are so many people who are not even haven't heard about Krishna or. They're just, we can say from our perspective that they're absorbing external energy and they are illusioned. And so they're changing their bodies, they're dying, they're taking the next birth. So ultimately, in some life, they will get the chance to hear the holy name or?
By the mercy of Krishna and the devotees. So if they get the chance, of course, chance to hear means that at first it's probably accidental. For instance, if we have Hare Krishna mantra and it goes on the radio and somebody hears Hare Krishna, then, okay, it goes in the ear and they don't think anything in this lifetime. Next lifetime, when they hear, get a little attracted to it maybe, next lifetime, they say, what is this Hare Krishna? So, first it's accidental, usually accidental, and then gradually over some lifetimes, but the attraction gradually increases through that and it develops into faith eventually.
Like we being trying to do the Krishna consciousness, but we also struggle so much. So, what about those who don't even know about Krishna?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's a very slow process for them. Take lifetimes. If you already know about Krishna and have faith, then of course it may take a few lifetimes, but obviously it's going to take many more lifetimes for them, because when are they going to get the next chance to hear Hare Krishna on the radio in a future lifetime? We don't know. You know, and then when it happens, then they get a little advancement, a little bit advancement. It's called the Gata Sukriti. It takes many lifetimes to build up that way because they don't even endeavor for it. So it's only accidental. In our case, it's not accidental anymore because we're seeking it out and reading scripture and getting association with devotees and practicing. So it's much quicker, but still, it'll take time, but it is much, much slower for those persons who have no faith at all.
It's so lucky that if you pick it, that somebody gave us book and if we are fortunate, we read it, then we became Krishna conscious. Otherwise, we struggle. So it's very, we can say, delicate thing. It's very fortunate for the person who takes it up.
Yeah. Fortunate, and of course, he's ripe for it also. Because many people get the books, they wouldn't read them. Many people see the books and don't take them like this. So it takes many births to get that position. Well, actually, you'll understand the philosophy. And before that, you cannot force a person. You must understand this. You're preaching to the faithless persons. So you can't do that because they won't take it. Or offend it, rather. So instead of committing offense, let it be neutral and let them be exposed to it. And gradually, they develop that way. But it takes time. We've been in the material world birth after birth for billions and billions and billions and billions of lifetimes. in the days and the nights of Brahma, and the lifetimes of Brahma. So, and it's taken us this long to get in this position.
Maharaj, when we were dead, originally in spiritual world, then we have some sort of form. And when we drop here in the material world, and then when we again go back to spiritual world, we will revive that original form?
Well, of course, we can't change our forms, basically, and whimsically go from one form to the other. It has to be, you know, constant. It has to be constant. You know, I can't keep changing forms.